Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sigurd's Swords by Eric Schumacher. Narrated by Gilda Jackson. Forward. AD 859. The Varangians, Rus, from beyond the sea, imposed tribute upon the Chuds, the Slavs, the Merians, the Ves, and the Krivichians. AD 860 to 862, the tributaries of the Varangians drove them back beyond the sea, and refusing them further tribute, set out to govern themselves. There was no law among them, but tribe rose against tribe. Discord thus ensued among them, and they began to war one against another. They said to themselves, "Let us seek a prince who may rule over us and judge us according to the law." They accordingly went overseas to the Varangian Ruses. The Chuds, the Slavs, the Krivichians, and the Ves then said to the people of Rus, "Our land is great and rich, but there is no order in it. Come to rule and reign over us." They thus selected three brothers with their kinsfolk, who took with them all the Ruses and migrated. The oldest, Rurik, located himself in Novgorod. AD 967, Grand Prince Sviatoslav, great-grandson of Rurik, marched to the Danube to attack the Bulgarians. When they fought together, Sviatoslav overcame the Bulgarians and captured 80 towns along the Danube. He took up his residence there. AD 968, while Sviatoslav was in the land of the Bulgars, the Pechenegs invaded Rus for the first time. So Olga, the mother of Sviatoslav, shut herself up in the city of Kiev, Konugat, with her grandsons, Yaropolk, Oleg, and Vladimir. The nomads besieged the city with great force. They surrounded it with an innumerable multitude, so that it was impossible to escape or send messages from the city, and the inhabitants were weak from hunger and thirst. The Russian Primary Chronicle. Part 1. Force rules the world still, has ruled it, shall rule it. Meekness is weakness, strength is triumphant. The Saga of King Olaf, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. 1. Konugat, Gartariki, late summer, AD 968. Fall was coming. I could feel it in the cold wind that whipped down the Dnieper River to the east of us. I could see it, too, in the clouds forming in the north. Thick and grey they were, carrying rain that I welcomed. Anything to slake my thirst and give the vile nomads who encircled our city, the Pechenegs, something to make their siege a little less pleasant. The Pechenegs had been our friends once, or so I was told, but they had turned on us while our leader, Grand Prince Sviatoslav, was away to the south, fighting the Bulgars. Now they camped by the thousands beyond our walls. Of those nomadic people I can say little save how much I despised them. I hated their swarthy looks, their equine stench, and the damned drums they beat each night. I hated their black felt hats and the food they cooked beneath our noses as we starved on the walls of Konugat. But mostly I hated them for their arrows and how they killed us from afar like cowards. The siege was entering its third month. In the first week of the siege they had overrun the neighbouring land, driving our army back to the ramparts that stood inside the city's moat. Those high wooden walls had been our home ever since. I looked at Olaf, My friend and charge stood next to me, fiddling with his sayaks. We had been nobles once, but had fled our homes when the sons of Eric had killed Olaf's father. Our flight had led to our capture by Estlont Vikings, who had sold us into slavery. For 7 long summers, as thralls, we prodded the Estlont bogs for pebbles of iron that our master smelted and sold in the market for profit. That had been a living version of hell. I had vowed upon my escape never to be captured again, and yet here I was, caged in the city of Konugat, and surrounded by death. At least here there was a glimmer of hope. We had sent messages to Grand Prince Sviatoslav early in the siege, begging him to return. If he did so before winter, we stood a chance. I glanced at the clouds yet again, as if I could divine the answer in their grey billows. They rolled on indifferently. "Thorgil!" called Lord Sigurd from his seat beneath the arrow-riddled parapet. I turned to find him regarding me wearily, his cerulean eyes dark-rimmed. He was a man in his prime, tall, muscular, his red hair unfaded, but I could hear the fatigue in his voice. Strewn across the fighting platform near him were the members of his household retinue, his hirt. Roughly 40 of us remained, representing all manner of people. Most of us were Rus, which is to say, Swedes, Danes, and Northmen, though there were also many Slavs, Ilmen, Chuds, Krivichi, and other tribes whose names I did not know. We differed greatly from one another in looks, but we were all bound by one oath, to serve Lord Sigurd. And one language, if you could call our jumble of Slavic and Norse a language at all. "Lord," I replied. "Mind your helmet," he warned. I reached up and straightened the conical helm on my head, then swiped my black bangs from my eyes with my grimy hand and turned back to the view. Sigurd was the maternal uncle of Olaf, and one of the lords of General Dobrynja, a prominent officer in the army of Grand Prince Sviatoslav. It had been Sigurd who had discovered Olaf in a marketplace when he was a thrall, and he also who had come to rescue me and my fellow thralls from the Estlont cesspit, where we were being held. He had seen our sorry state and had brought us back to his hall near Holmgut, offering us a roof and food and rest, a kindness I promised to repay with my service to him. When I was sufficiently healed of my external wounds, he allowed me to train with Olaf and his men, for I had been taught in the way of weapons by my own father before my enslavement. Under Sigurd's steady and patient tutelage, my body mended and my skills improved, until that fateful day when he had offered me a place in his hirt alongside Olaf. My service was for 5 summers, and I accepted it gladly. Not a week later we received news that we were going to the great walled city the Slavs call Kiev, Konugat to we Northmen, to protect Grand Prince Sviatoslav's mother, Queen Olga, and his sons, Yarpolk, Oleg, and Vladimir, while he campaigned in the south. Sigurd had said it would be an easy assignment, a summer in a beautiful city surrounded by beautiful women. I bristled at the memory, for the Pechenegs had come not long after we arrived, and quickly overran the area. Since then, we had known nothing but misery. "How do you think Turit would like this?" I asked Olaf, thinking of our mutual friend who served in Sigurd's household. She had wanted to be a warrior. Indeed, she had the skill for it, but Sigurd had forbidden it. He believed it would cause too much strife among his men. Mayhap he was right. Turit was a striking redhead with glacial eyes and freckled skin, whose beauty had captivated me since we were children. It was not difficult to see how men might fight for her attention. Olaf smirked through his short amber beard.
Truth be told, I think she would enjoy it. Not the suffering, but the fighting. That she would like.
I smiled at the truth in Olaf's words. She had been a fellow thrall with us, and had shown her fighting prowess during our escape. Aye, she would. We should bring it up again to Sigurd, if we return from this place.
When we return,
Olaf corrected. Unlike me, he did not see the dark side of reality. He still believed the rubbish his father had fed him when we were small, that he was destined for greatness. I rolled my eyes, but knew there was no sense in arguing.
You should marry her, you know,
he offered quietly. Neither of you is getting any younger, and it would be good for you to have a son. I glanced at my friend, who was taller than me by half a head, though he was 4 winters my junior. It was true what he said. I was in my 20th fall, and Turit was older than me by a winter. I knew she was fond of me, but our friendship had never gone past a peck on the cheek. Olaf's comment was not far off the mark, but I refused to let him know that. Any advantage given him was an advantage he would take, if not now, then later. So instead I furrowed my brows and gave him my most puzzled look. What makes you think I want to marry her? Or want a child?
Oh, come! You have always had feelings for her ever since we were young whelps. And what man does not want a son to carry on his name and his memory?
What about you? I countered. You could easily marry her.
He snorted. I could never marry her.
He moved closer to me, and his blue eyes swung to and fro as he checked for listeners. I am a prince. If I marry, it will be for gain, and she cannot offer me that, though, he raised a finger, I would not mind discovering what other gifts she has to offer. When she had flowered, the son of our Estlaunt slave master had taken Turit as his concubine. It was a wound from which she would never heal, and a wound on which Olaf had just trodden. My temper flared, and I punched him hard in the shoulder.
"What did you do that for?"
His eyes flashed as he straightened from the blow, genuinely shocked at my response. "To remind you to watch your tongue," I growled. "You know how sensitive she is about that."
"But she is not here, is she?"
Olaf snarled at me and slid down the wall to a spot near my feet. I did not care. His callous comment poked at wounds he had no business poking. I was about to say something more when a horn rang out from the watchtower and turned my attention back to the enemy.
"What is happening out there?"
Sigurd asked. I peered more closely at the Pechenegg encampment.
"There is some movement." "My dead mother would give a better report than that, Bogbreath. Why is the watchman blowing a horn?"
asked Sigurd's second-in-command, a brute named Ulrich, who lounged near Sigurd with his eyes closed. He'd had the honour of serving as Sigurd's second-in-command for multiple summers, and had the scars to prove it. At some point in our journey to Konugard, he had decided I needed a byname, and so had started calling me Bogbreath because of my time as a thrall in the Estlaunt bogs. I hated the name.
"What kind of movement?"
Sigurd asked more patiently. A small number of men had climbed onto their stocky steeds and were heading off to the west.
"Looks like a foraging party," I surmised.
"That is what you said the last time they attacked," mumbled Olaf.
"Piss off," I replied, and kicked him.
"If you kick me again, Torgil, I will break your ankle," Olaf growled.
"Try it," I hissed.
"Torgil," Sigurd snapped. "The enemy is that way."
He pointed over the wall.
Near him, Ulrich snorted.
With a muffled curse, I turned my eyes back to the vast army before me. It was, in truth, jaw-dropping. I was the son of a northern noble who had been a friend to Olaf's father, a northern king. Men who could gather hundreds of spearmen to their banners in mere days. As a youth, I had been so impressed by that, and yet it paled in comparison to the thousands that had gathered beyond our walls and now covered the plain like an undulating blanket of humanity. Though I stood on the walls of the largest city I had ever known, I felt like a pimple on the arse of their might.
"Where is Sviatoslav?" I wondered aloud, giving voice to my unease.
"Probably screwing some Bolgar wench," replied a bald, blue-eyed Dane named Orm. His name meant worm, and I thought it fit him well. He had a long yellow beard, long limbs, and a long body, capped by a round head that was red with his latest sunburn, the skin peeling as if he were molting. Orm's sarcasm spilled from his mouth as surely as his skin flaked from his scalp. The men chuckled at Orm's words, for it was known that Grand Prince Sviatoslav liked his women as much as he liked his campaigns. "Worry not, Torgil," added Sigurd, as if reading my thoughts. "His mother has sent messengers. If there is anyone he heeds, it is her. Besides, we have been in worse binds before, as have you and Olaf, I think." And just as his words reached my ears, the Pechenegg arrows struck.
2. I jerked my head down and cursed as an arrow bit into the wood where my head had been. Ulrich jumped to his feet and peered over the parapet at the army.
"Toki, the horn!"
he shouted at a short, burly northman. I tightened the strap on my helmet and glanced over the parapet. The foraging party had vanished and archers had appeared in their wake. I had not seen the bowmen assemble, and I cursed my inattention.
"Down!"
Ulrich roared. The world erupted. Arrows slammed into the parapets, some ripping through the wood, others ricocheting off the corners of our battlements. Toki blew a long warning blast on his horn until an arrow tore it from his hand. He cursed and scurried for cover along with the others. Down the wall, men bellowed orders or screamed as missiles found their mark. Inside the walls, Konugard citizens raced for shelter. The accuracy and constancy of these Pechenegg arrows were both terrifying and maddening. We defenders had our own bows, but the steady downpour of Pechenegg steel made them nearly impossible to use. Even hidden men were at risk of being pierced by a lucky arrow penetrating a gap between the wooden beams of our walls, or arcing over our battlements to stab a foot or a leg. All we could do was cover ourselves with our shields, pray, and wait to see where the nomads planted their ladders. I glanced over at Olaf, who was huddled tightly against the battlement, mumbling something to himself.
"Come with me to Sigurd's,"
I called to him, reciting words he had said to me not so long ago. He looked over at me.
"You will like it there," I continued. "It is very cold in the winter, but the summer is beautiful."
Olaf laughed.
"I did not lie, did I?"
If this is your notion of beauty, then you are a madman. I called over the hiss and thud of arrow strikes, then cursed as one lodged into the fighting platform just 2 hands' width from where I squatted. It is fall, not summer, he replied. It rains in the fall. I cursed him and yanked my axe from my belt. It was a crude yet powerful hand axe, its handle no longer than my forearm, its blade sharp and bearded. Most men fought with sayaks, longer battle axes or spears, but I preferred the short axe for its weight and its balance, and because it set me apart from the others. I called her Hevnt, which meant vengeance, because ultimately that is how I would use her, to kill those who had robbed me of my former life. "Ladders coming in!" called Sigurd. "Got!" grunted Toki as he peeked through one of the holes in our walls. "Look at them all! Even the women are coming!" A quick glance over the walls confirmed Toki's words. Save for the archers and the few horsemen at the rear, it seemed the entire army came for us. Up and down our line, ladders thudded against the walls, and men shouted to clear them. I grabbed a ladder's rail and pushed, toppling it. To the other side of me, Ulrich heaved against another. "They're breaching!" called Olaf, pointing to a spot 20 paces to our right, where several Petchen eggs had appeared on the fighting platform. "Toki, take Orm, Torgil, and Olaf, go!" called Sigurd as he forced another ladder clear of the wall. My body moved before I thought to do so. I have heard men speak of battle joy, but I would not call it that, for there was no joy in it, just a strange sense of effortlessness and invincibility. Time seemed to slow, as if I were 2 steps ahead of my opponents. Thoughts ceased, replaced by action and reaction. I welcomed that feeling as I plunged after my comrades and into the mass of Pechenegs. Toki, Olaf, and Orm were ahead of me and engaged 3 warriors who had just landed on the fighting platform. I swung my axe at a man whose head had just appeared above the parapet. He carried a knife in his teeth, which fell free as soon as my blade sank into his forehead. As he plummeted backward, I pushed his ladder clear and turned back to the mass of men and slashing steel. There was a flash to my right, and I ducked instinctively. A Pechenegg blade sailed over my head and hacked into the wood beams behind me. At the same moment, I swung downward with my axe, severing my assailant's leg at the knee. The warrior, a woman, screeched and grabbed for her wound. With my shield I drove her from the platform and down onto the street below. To my left, Olaf fought a bear of a man, a sayaxe in each of his hands. He did not like to carry a shield. To him it felt too restrictive. There were few men I knew who could fight with both hands, and of them Olaf was the best. Even at 16 winters he was God's touched in his skill. Still, I did not like how he toyed with the man, and so I hacked my blade into the Pechenegg's armored shoulder with all the ceremony of a butcher slaughtering a cow. The man's legs buckled, and Olaf finished him with a stab to his throat. "I was just about to kill him!" he yelled at me. "There is no time for games," I countered. "Kill them fast!" A ladder landed against the wall, and I rushed to dislodge it. As I pushed one of the rails free, the Pechenegg at the top lassoed me, pinning my arms against my sides and using me as a counterweight to his backward fall. I leaned back instinctively, but the weight of the collapsing ladder was too great, and my feet slid forward. In a moment he would either kill me, or I would fly headlong over the parapet to my death, and I could do nothing. A blade saved me, though whose I cannot say. It flashed before me, severing the taut rope. I plummeted backward and slammed my head against the platform. The Pechenegg cried out as his ladder pitched backward and out of sight. But there was no time for celebration. No sooner had I landed on my back than another warrior came for me. I struggled to free my arms from the lasso, but it was clear he would reach me first. He raised his sword to strike, but it never came down. Instead, a blade erupted from his belly and he staggered, giving me an instant to grab a shield to cover myself before he collapsed on my chest. I pushed him off and scrambled to my feet in time to face a man who charged me with his blade held high. I dodged his wild blow and hacked into his back. Two more warriors came behind him. One tripped on a body, but the other leaped the corpse to face me. I caught the man's swipe on my shield, feeling its strength ripple up my arm. He moved left, forcing me to turn that way to strike at him. The move exposed my right shoulder to his comrade, who had untangled himself and was coming fast. I feigned a swing at the first Pechenegg, then turned my wrist, dropped to a knee, and swiped backhand at the second man. The man tried to block my blade, but could not bring his shield around in time. Heavant cut deeply across his thigh, and he faltered. I turned back to the first assailant, and realized with a sudden shock that he no longer had his head. A series of horn blasts rang out from the Pechenegg camp. I braced myself, expecting to see even more enemy warriors appear on our walls. But the opposite occurred. Those Pechenegs, still alive, scrambled for their ladders and disappeared, leaving us wondering why they would break off their attack so suddenly. We struggled to dislodge their ladders as they descended, only to be thwarted by their archers, whose missiles pattered on the wooden platform like rain. When it ended, I lifted my shield and looked about. Bodies littered the fighting platform, their limbs twisted and tangled in some macabre dance of death. Upon them quivered the fletching of arrows too numerous to count, like wild flowers in a spring meadow. Down the line of survivors to my right sat Olaf, looking at me with a mischievous smile on his blood-smeared face. Normally I did not like that smile, for it usually meant that he was about to embark on some misadventure. But I liked seeing it now on his living face. I nodded at him and grinned, then rested my head against the wood and closed my eyes. Off to my right, a distant cheer rose. I rolled my head in that direction and opened my eyes. Far away on the eastern portion of Konugat's walls, men yelled and waved their arms and their banners. An equally fervent yet fainter cheer answered. Slowly the cheer rippled along the wall until it reached our position. I climbed to my feet and looked down at the Pechenegg army. While the main camp remained in place, many of the cavalrymen had moved off to the banks of the Dnieper, and now I saw why. There, in the water, floated a small fleet of Rus ships, mayhap 40 in all, just beyond the range of the Pechenegg arrows. I howled with relief and joy, lending my voice to those of my comrades, for in my mind I believed we were saved. 3. A messenger arrived on horseback from the palace later that day. We gazed at the man for his rich garb and steed, one of the few remaining in the city, marked him as a servant of the royal court. He led a spare horse that more than a few of us eyed hungrily. The messenger shielded his eyes from the midday sun as he gazed up at us. "Is Lord Sigurd alive?" he called. Sigurd walked to the platform's edge and folded his thick arms.
A small gash in his cheek dripped blood into his rust-coloured beard.
"I am," he answered. "Prince Vlad..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?